This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Meet the new president of Illinois State University. After 19 men before her, Terry Goss Kinsey becomes the first female in that job.
It's important for everyone to see that potential exists to go into leadership and to bring your voice and to have it heard. And so it's very exciting.
Plus, no one knows how many cops, city workers, and public-facing employees have had the coronavirus vaccine in Bloomington Normal. The chief clinical officer for OSF Healthcare talks about what new guidance on masks means for you in central Illinois. And arts correspondent Brianna Groh brings a group of young artists to you. That and a news update on the way. This is Sound Ideas on WGLT.
Support for Sound Ideas comes from Bloomington Normal Audiology, the best hearing device center in the Pantograph Reader's Choice Awards for the sixth year in a row. Bloomington Normal Audiology thanks the listeners and their continued vote of confidence as the leaders in hearing and technology. With a practice featuring five doctors, including two who wear hearing devices themselves, BNA takes a genuine interest in each patient and helps you keep hearing the most important sounds of your life. More information at bnaudiology.com. Bloomington Normal Audiology, here for you.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Let's run down some of the day's top stories. Illinois State University's 20th president is also its first female president. ISU trustees have named Terry Goss Kinsey as the successor to the retiring Larry Dietz.
It's important for everyone to see that potential exists to go into leadership and to bring your voice and to have it heard. And so it's very exciting.
Kinsey is the Vice President for Research and Innovation at Western Michigan University. Trustees Chair Julie Jones says Kinsey's research skills shine through during the interviews.
That was one of the reasons. We could clearly see from her first interview that she did extensive research on Illinois State, and we thought she knew what she could do, and she knew even more when she came back to the second round. And so she is a thoughtful person.
Kinsey's been in education for 25 years. She gets a $375,000 salary. McLean County's weekly coronavirus caseload fell to its lowest mark in over 2 months. The county added 37 new daily cases. McLean County Health Department spokesperson Marianne Manco credits COVID vaccines with keeping new cases down.
We are seeing lower cases. They've been quite effective in preventing the transmission of the disease, and in preventing serious illness, and preventing hospitalizations. So, and infections are milder and shorter for people who do have them.
Children make up the largest share of new cases in the county. McLean County will join an agreement with Bloomington and Normal to share costs for a recycling drop-off program. County Board Member Jim Soldner says he wanted the county to pay only 15%, arguing residents in the rural areas would use it less. He was told, he says, the program may die without the county funding.
I didn't want to be part of that. I think it's a valuable program. Hopefully in the future they'll do a little more to help the rural residents to recycling, maybe by putting a box somewhere closer to the rural parts.
The Twin Cities and the county will contribute $65,000 in the first year. Costs will be adjusted in future years based on use. The Bloomington Election Commission is looking for a new director. Elections Commissioner Kim Kaiser says the previous director, Tim Mitchell, chose to take an opportunity outside the office. Mitchell held the position for a little more than a year. He was chosen after longtime director Paul Shannon retired. Before taking the job, Mitchell was a member of the board overseeing the commission and its director. Kim Kaiser replaced Mitchell on that board. Kaiser says the board will meet June 2nd to talk about the process to find a new director. Kaiser says Mitchell's departure will not disrupt the commission's planned move from the fourth floor of the county government complex to the new City of Bloomington hub, opening next week on the first floor of the building in the old Parks and Recreation office space. An agency that serves those with disabilities in central Illinois says it will open a second pediatric therapy center. Mark First CEO Brian Whipperman says it will be located in the Carl Broman Outpatient Center on East Empire Street, across from the airport. It will have a sensory gym and therapy rooms to analyze children ages 1 to 3 who are on the autism spectrum. The first pediatric therapy outlet opened in 2018 and relocated last November to larger grounds at at Carl Broman Medical Center in Normal. To honor the late chief operating officer at Mark First, the agency named the pediatric centers in honor of Greg Chadwick. Wipperman says the new center will allow Mark First to serve three times as many children with autism than before with behavior analysis, physical, occupational, and speech therapies. This is Sound Ideas on 89.1 FM WGLT and WGLT.org. I'm Charlie Schlenker.
Support for WGLT comes from Bloomington Normal Audiology. May is Better Hearing Month, a time for raising awareness about communication disorders and their solutions. The doctors of audiology at BNA see this month as a great opportunity to start building or rebuilding the most important connections in life. More information at bnaudiology.com.
You're listening to Bloomington Normal's Public Media. Illinois State University's 20th president is also its first female president. Eric Stock introduces us to Terry Goss Kinsey.
Kinsey is currently vice president for research and innovation at Western Michigan University. She'll succeed the retiring Larry Dietz this summer. As Kinsey stood next to ISU's first female and first black board of trustees chair, Julie Jones, Kinsey marked the significance of the moment.
There is a sense of responsibility as a role model. I think as we both stand up here, we recognize that. And I think that we want to embody the spirit of diversity, equity, and inclusion for everyone.
Kinsey says the diversity of ISU's search committee likely led to a more diverse pool of candidates. Trustees Chair Julie Jones says she made diversity a focus of the presidential search.
I noticed how the previous search committees looked, and in an effort to increase the diversity of the pool myself, I added six positions onto the search committee that were specifically committed to groups that represented concerns for diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Kinsey has been in education for 25 years. In describing her leadership style, Kinsey uses buzzwords like empowering and student-focused.
I believe that students are a great pulse of where our university is, but also a pulse of where our country is and where our future is. And so they are often thinking about different things than we are because of they're seeing the future of their lives and their careers.
Jones says Kinsey can bring a fresh perspective to ISU using her well-honed skills as a researcher.
That was one of the reasons we could clearly see from her first interview that she did extensive research on Illinois State, and we thought she knew what she could do, and she knew even more when she came back to the second round. And so she is a thoughtful person.
Kinsey notes higher education faces challenges starting with the pandemic, though she sees it also as an opportunity to reassess everything. As for a return to normal for the fall, Kinsey defers to the current administration on whether the campus should require students to get the COVID vaccine, as the Student Government Association wants.
I believe in always starting with a campaign of the science behind why that we should do this and getting community engagement. But I think that decision is one that will be made by the institution before I arrive, and I think we're all looking at what is in the best interest of everyone involved.
The university is also in the midst of a contract dispute with the Graduate Student Workers Union. The union feels its work at ISU is undervalued. It wants the university to prioritize its needs before pushing big new projects, such as a new engineering college. Kinsey expressed confidence a federal mediator will help the university and union come to an agreement.
I will tell you, when I was at Rutgers and we integrated the health sciences into Rutgers, we had 30 unions. So it's a part of what we do, and I have confidence that that will be able to get worked out.
Kinsey previously served as vice president of research in the Department of Biochemistry and Molecular Biology at Rutgers in New Jersey. Colleges in Illinois also face the challenge of high school students fleeing the state. Kinsey says she wants to see an emphasis on student retention and finding non-traditional students.
We need to think about veterans. We need to think about people who may have interrupted their education and may want to come back because of change in the economy and the job market. So I'd say that really making sure that we are rigorous in recruiting people here and that they come, that they feel like a part of a community.
Larry Dietz's last day as ISU president will be June 30th after 7 years in the post. Dietz's tenure includes rewrites of ISU's strategic plan, the opening of the Center for Civic Engagement, and a renovation of Bone Student Center. ISU has also added a cybersecurity degree and plans to launch an engineering college. Dietz's tenure also included the Redbirds Rising campaign. It yielded more than $180 million in private support. And Kinsey credits Dietz for guiding the university through the pandemic and other challenges.
Not every university has come out of some of the adversity that you faced as well as Illinois State University. And you should all be very proud of your contributions in that. And it is clear that his leadership And your contributions have demonstrated the resiliency of this fine institution.
Kinsey's annual salary will be $375,000. The four-year contract also includes retirement contributions, use of a vehicle, and the university residence, along with other customary items such as a country club membership that are valued at more than $49,000 per year. I'm Eric Stock.
ISU notes Goss Kinsey has secured more than $8 million in funding for various projects in science. This is 89.1 FM WGLT and WGLT.org. I'm Charlie Schlenker. More than 61,000 people in McLean County are fully vaccinated against COVID-19. That is just over a third of the population. But do you know how many of our police officers, street crews, and other public-facing employees are vaccinated? Actually, no one does. Eric Stock reports local government leaders say when it comes to staff vaccinations, it's don't ask, don't tell.
Kathy Olofsson is Director of Communications and Community Relations for the Town of Normal. She says town staff is generally forthcoming about getting their COVID vaccines so coworkers can plan accordingly.
Many coworkers have been very honest about like, oh, I'm going to be out, I'm getting my vaccine, or I might be here depending on how I respond to the vaccine. So many people have shared it voluntarily.
But Olofsson stresses notification is purely voluntary.
The reason the town hasn't asked is because we respect the privacy of our employees, and we want them to make the personal decision and not feel pressure from the town one way or the other.
Olofsson says the town encourages all staff to get vaccinated and use paid leave when they get their shots. Administrators for Bloomington, Normal, and McLean County government agree. They say they follow and enforce the public health guidelines, and they encourage employees to get vaccinated, but mandating vaccines or disclosure is a bridge too far. Bloomington Mayor Mboka Mwilamboy says forcing vaccines on people is un-American. He says the city plans to rely on public health data to determine what steps it should take to limit COVID spread.
The most important thing for me is for us to just have, you know, the overall numbers that we have from the county. I think that's good enough.
The city's Civilian Police Review Board received three complaints against police officers for not wearing face masks on the job last fall before anyone was vaccinated. The department says it addressed the issue through more robust training. Mayor Mwilamboy says he doesn't see this as a public trust issue.
It was addressed and the police officers have been known to routinely put on their masks and everything. So I don't know that we should drill down to that specific.
Employees may want to know how many of their workers received the vaccine to make decisions about staffing and other COVID protocols. But asking can be tricky. Danielle Kays is an employment attorney in Bloomington. Kays says the most frequent questions she hears from clients are, can they require their employees disclose if they've received the COVID vaccine, and can they simply require the vaccine? Kays says the answer to both questions is yes.
Employers can ask about whether an employee has been vaccinated, and by asking, that's not a disability-related inquiry. They can also ask that their employees become vaccinated.
Kays says the rules are the same for public and private employers. Kays says employees can seek a medical or religious exemption. In that case, employers should work with their employees on accommodations. That could mean keeping workstations distanced or continued mask wearing. But Kays says many employers are reluctant to mandate the vaccine. She says they have to weigh public health against their employees' privacy.
Employers might prefer to be able to tell their clients, their customers that, you know, they're providing a safe environment and requiring that employees be vaccinated. But on the flip side, there's, you know, morale issues, there's attrition issues.
Illinois lawmakers have filed several bills to relax or strengthen COVID guidelines. State Representative Dan Brady of Bloomington is one of 16 Illinois House Republicans who are sponsoring a ban against vaccine mandates. One public body in Bloomington Normal has a good indication of how many among its staff are vaccinated.
Our staff members were just bringing us their vaccination cards to keep a record of it here. And so we ended up keeping track
That's Matt Sweeney. He's the public information officer with the Normal Fire Department. Sweeney says most firefighters likely turned in their vaccination cards out of habit. He says they often have to submit paperwork for medical exams and training certifications, so handing over their personal health information is second nature to them. Sweeney says 70% of fire department staff has disclosed they are fully vaccinated. He suspects the vaccination rate is higher than that, since staff doesn't have to report. Plus, he says some firefighters may have at least temporary immunity after they contracted the coronavirus. More than a dozen firefighters in Normal came down with COVID in one outbreak last summer. But Sweeney says the department doesn't require vaccines or disclosure. He says firefighters understand the risks because they have to live with the challenges of COVID every day.
Obviously, they offered it to, you know, first responders and frontline workers first, and it's because we're out there every day and we still are transporting COVID cases.
Firefighters and other frontline workers may be more motivated to get the COVID vaccine, but the general public is more hesitant. About 36% of McLean County's population is fully vaccinated. Vaccines are now fairly easy to get for most people. You can walk into a clinic or your pharmacy or your grocery store and get the vaccine of your choice. Kathy Olofsson with the Town of Normal says she understands some just aren't ready to get jabbed and some may never be.
And I think that's what we're going to see as a community moving forward, is people are going to remain all along the spectrum in terms of what they're comfortable with. And we just have to respect that and understand that that is the current reality.
The other reality is COVID isn't going away anytime soon, even as Illinois expands capacity limits for businesses with an eye toward a possible full reopening in a few weeks. I'm Eric Stock.
Next week on Sound Ideas, teachers have generally been eager to get the COVID vaccine. They hope for a return to normal next school year. This is Bloomington Normal's Public Media. I'm Charlie Schlenker. The new CDC guidance says fully vaccinated people can now go maskless in most settings, outdoors or indoors. Tim Shelley speaks with Dr. Steve Hippler, Chief Clinical Officer for OSF Healthcare, about what that means for you.
The CDC suggests that if you're fully vaccinated, which means 2 weeks have elapsed since your second shot of Moderna or Pfizer, or 2 weeks have elapsed since your only dose of Johnson & Johnson, that at that point in time, fully vaccinated people are free to go without masks outdoors or in any indoor event. Now, there's still some caveats that businesses can have specific requirements to require that. It exempts hospitals, so we are in the process of understanding what that means for us as a hospital system. And if you're around immunosuppressed or patients at high risk, that also would be a reason to wear a mask. And lastly, public transportation where it's required by federal law. So that's where it stands now.
That guidance or that announcement comes as a surprise to you?
I think the timing of it was a surprise. But if you look back for months, we've been vaccinating as a country at a great rate. And we knew that there would come a point in time where the vaccination rate would be up, the cases would be down, and we would start to get to some semblance of normalcy. It's just a matter of when. So I think the timing of yesterday's announcement surprised me, but not that we are eventually at this place in time.
If I am immunocompromised, should I still wear a mask even if I am fully vaccinated?
Well, I think the other thing we need to remember is that the use of masks and the physical distancing and hand washing essentially created a flu season with no influenza. RSV in kids was down to historically low numbers. So we know that these public health measures that were put in place have a tremendous benefit on all contagious respiratory illnesses. So for patients who are immunocompromised or at increased risk, I would encourage them to talk to their physician, understand what their unique risks are, and I would always recommend taking some measure of caution, always, and trying to protect yourself if you are at increased risk.
If I'm around kids a lot who are too young to get the vaccine, should I still mask up to protect them?
You know, a great question. We know that any of these vaccines are highly effective, but not perfect. that even immunized persons can get COVID and perhaps may carry it. The CDC recommendations come from the realization that younger kids and young adults are at much lower risk of severe disease and hospitalization. But again, it's not absolute. So, you know, continue to wear a mask is not unreasonable in special situations. And again, to always hand wash and to try to distance and use common sense in large, tight, packed, confined areas.
Doctor, anything else that people need to know or you think they might want to know about this right now?
I think the real important message to drive home is for people who and adults who are not vaccinated to get the vaccine. There's been enough evidence and of efficacy and safety right now that I think most people should feel comfortable getting the vaccine. Still only a third of the United States is fully vaccinated. And only 50% have had one vaccine. Now, as we extend it to kids, those numbers will go up, but there still are a fair number of adults for whom they're eligible who have not yet been vaccinated. So I would encourage them to know the facts. I'd encourage them, if they have questions, to talk to their primary care providers, physicians, and to really understand and consider and really, really get vaccinated.
That's OSF Healthcare Chief Clinical Officer Dr. Steve Hippler speaking with Tim Shelley about the new CDC mask guidance. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. They say a picture is worth a thousand words, which is a good thing, because the students of Stephen Robinson's Normal Community High School sociology class have a lot to say. The works of 53 of Robinson's students will be featured at University Galleries in Uptown Normal starting June 1st. Arts correspondent Brianna Groh talks with the adults behind the project and its rising artists.
Gallery director and chief curator Kendra Pate says it's unusual for high school students to get the full gallery treatment. But it's all thanks to COVID-19 in a way.
We had this funding from the Town of Normal Harmon Arts Grant program that was supposed to be for field trip programs. And clearly we couldn't subsidize bus trips here during a COVID year.
So the students couldn't come to the gallery. But Pates wondered, what could the gallery bring to the students? A graduate assistant suggested they reach out to Normal Community High School sociology teacher Stephen Robinson. It turned out Robinson found himself in a similar pickle.
Before COVID happened, my class was structured in part around a project that I call the Impact Project, where they got to learn about anything they wanted, as long as they did it in a way that they did some sort of social good.
The pandemic put the project on hold. He says they just finished a unit exploring the links between the economy and the climate crisis when Pates reached out. So when Pates suggested the students react to the climate-inspired works of Chicago-based artist Alice Hargrave, Robinson was all in.
Like, absolutely, that sounds awesome.
The Canary in the Lake, the exhibition that's been on display at University Galleries since March, features 20 of Hargrave's lake portraits. The 10-foot-long, gauzy fabric banners are eye-catching, printed with bright colors and unique patterns. But as Pates explains,
that's to kind of draw you in and get you sort of thinking about the issues that they're exploring.
Those patterns are actually visual representations of hard data collected by scientists researching the effects of climate change on 20 lakes around the world. Some represent rising temperatures or mercury levels, others decreasing shoreline or wildlife habitat. Pates and Robinson worked with University Galleries Curator of Education, Tanya Scott, to devise a two-month project for the students based on the themes and methods of Hargrave's work.
The material that we chose was SolarFast, which is a photosensitive emulsion that you add to fabric.
Scott and ISU graduate assistant Aaron Caldwell created a video demonstration, along with materials kits, to help students translate their own data sets into works of art.
After putting your goggles and gloves on, prepare your fabric for printing by either taping it down using masking tape or just set it as is on top of your foam board.
Robinson guided his students through the process of choosing their research topic and collecting the data.
I have a student who's really into music, and he had a hard time thinking of an idea. And I was like, well, I know you're interested in music and you like live music. Have you ever thought about the environmental impact of large touring shows?
The student created a band t-shirt for his project after researching the impact of his favorite band, The Grateful Dead. Students Casey Myers and Lauren Sanderson decided to collaborate on their project.
I knew that I wanted to do something that had a more like positive outlook on it and something that like personally meant more to me. Both Lauren and I are involved in cross country and track for our school. So every single day for practice, we go on the Constitution Trail.
Sanderson had the idea to survey locals about the trail.
So we asked like how often do they go to the trail and then what activities they do on the trail.
The pair created two pieces, one depicting the sister city's Japanese garden, the second a little free library, both located along the trail. Both students say they appreciate the experience. Here's Sanderson.
It was almost like an eye-opener, too, of how important the trail actually is. I don't think I've appreciated it enough.
And Myers.
I've never done it, like an art project like this at all, or like had my artwork exhibited at like a gallery before. So I just think this is a really cool experience and a really cool opportunity.
Pate says the project has been really cool for gallery staff, too, as a chance to bring into the fold students who might not otherwise have a reason to engage with art with a capital A. The works of Stephen Robinson's Normal Community High School sociology classes will be on display at the University Galleries in Uptown Normal beginning June 1st. I'm Brianna Groh.
You can try your own hand at the project by following along with the demonstration video now available on the University Galleries website. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT, made possible in part by Bloomington Normal Audiology. I'm Charlie Schlenker. This is Bloomington Normal's Public Media.